Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here for this Wednesday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orrico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrrico99 and also at EthosFantasyBB. That's where we post all of our new podcasts, articles, news and notes. Every bit of baseball content gets shared out there. That's EthosFantasyBB. Make sure you guys are throwing us a follow over there. Now, I know you've likely drafted already, but you can still check out our draft guide. I'm going to link it in the description of the episode today. I'm not going to be doing that going forward. You guys are going to get links out on Twitter for our Fantasy Pass and Draft Guide. But the last day of the preseason, I am going to put that link in the description in case you guys are drafting tonight, want to look over some last-minute rankings, analysis, prep. We have our Draft Tracker tool, which is available to subscribers as well, which compares your team in real time using the ATC projections with the rest of your league. So if you do have a draft still, then take a look. If not, we are going to be transitioning to in-season content. You're going to be getting articles recommending player pickups, weekly fab. You're going to have breakdowns of bullpens, lineups. All of it is going to be included there in the Fantasy Pass. If you've already purchased the draft guide, that will just roll over into the in-season content, which is going to be starting tomorrow. We're very excited for the start of the season, so make sure you guys are following along here with everything we have at Sports Ethos and at sportsethos.com as well. But today is the final preseason show. We are going to be talking about my most rostered players across my 14 leagues, and we are going to be talking about not just my most rostered players, but my favorite players to draft at every position. There is quite a bit of overlap there, as you might imagine. There are some players that I wish I was able to get my hands on more that I wasn't able to just based on the way the drafts went. But we're going to talk about my favorite players and my most drafted players. We'll start off by going through my ideal team. I posted this on Twitter last night, the my guys team, if you will. These are the players that I like more than pretty much any other players at their position. Now, this is a relative thing, right? If I'm going to list my favorite outfielders, it's not going to be Acuna and Julio and Mookie Betts and what, you know. It's a little more nuanced than that. I didn't want to just pick. I didn't have any first round, second round, third round players here. This is deeper guys generally that I did like a lot in drafts this year. Not always deep, but we're not talking first round players here because that would be a little bit too obvious. Let's start with Wilson Contreras. He's kind of an overlap guy here because he's my favorite catcher on my all my guys team, which I coined it, which is kind of goofy, but he's my catcher on that team, and he is the most drafted player that I have across my leagues this year. Tied for the number one spot. Wilson Contreras, I think the price was just kind of ridiculously low all draft season. I don't really understand why he was still going in like the 140s, 150s, 160 range. I just don't understand it. I think that there is some kind of bias that people had against the Cardinals after last year where they think the team stinks now. I've said it a million times. I'm blue in the face with this one at this point, but the Cardinals were not bad last year offensively. Their pitching let them down. Their pitching was awful. It went into the season. Miles Michaelis is your opening day starter. You're not going to have so much success on the mound. It's just the way that it works. They don't have a lot of pitching depth. They didn't last year. They don't really this year as well, but that doesn't impact the offense. Wilson Contreras, Goldschmidt, Arenado, a lot of these guys were undervalued, I think, because of the team they play for, because, well, St. Louis wasn't good, and people just kind of ran with that. But Wilson Contreras last year was as good as he always is. Only 125 games, which is pretty standard for him for most catchers. 20 homers, he stole six bases, batted .264. Very, very standard stuff, and that was with all the nonsense going on in year one about maybe he gets moved to right field. They weren't happy with him behind the dish for the first month of the year, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And he still ended up doing what he always does. That offense is very good. I don't think that they're going to be an amazing team as a whole because, like I said, that pitching is still, you know, lacking quite a few pieces, if we're being honest. But there's no reason to doubt Wilson Contreras, especially at the price you were paying outside of the top 10 catchers in a lot of leagues being drafted, and I just never really understood it. So I hammered him. He is somebody that I have on a lot of my teams, and I'm going to be not living or dying with him because it's a catcher, but I have a lot of Wilson Contreras this year, and I do not regret it one bit. If I could go back, I would draft him even more often than I did. Josh Naylor at first base, I've talked about him. We talked about him yesterday on my Bold Prediction show as somebody who I think is going to end up getting MVP votes. I've gone through him a lot recently, especially on the first base preview and yesterday. But Josh Naylor, if he had played a whole season last year, probably 25-10 with a .300 batting average, 100 ribbies. I think that lineup is going to be improved with Bo Naylor around for the whole season. And I think Kyle Manzardo will be up before we know it, helping out as well. So I think the offense as a whole got better. I think Naylor, as a year older, is, I mean, progression is, like I've said a lot of times, like a lot of people say, it's not necessarily linear, but at this point with Naylor, it's just about fine-tuning a couple of small things that are really, you know, not even stopping him from breaking out. Last year, he did break out, and if it wasn't for the injury, we'd be talking about him as a top 100 pick. But because he got hurt, you got a bit of a discount, and because of that, I hammered Josh Naylor in a lot of my leagues. Second base, Tyro Estrada, another guy I talked about in my Bold Predictions episode yesterday. I think that Tyro Estrada is a top 50 player this year. He was vastly undervalued in drafts all season. Generally about 140 to 160 range I was getting him, second and short eligible. You're not hurting you anywhere. You're getting decent power, especially from a middle infielder. Good speed with the potential for a lot more. We went into that in depth yesterday about why I think he's going to steal more, and I think a lot of the Giants are going to steal more. He doesn't hurt you anywhere. He's helping you out across all five categories, multi-eligible guy going in the 150s for a much improved offense. I mean, there's a lot to really like about Tyro. I drafted him a hell of a lot this season. At shortstop, it's O'Neill Cruz. Again, another guy who was in this Bold Predictions yesterday. I think he's a first-rounder. I think that the price all season on O'Neill Cruz was ridiculous. Now it's gotten ridiculous in another angle. He's gone in the first round in some drafts. But he was going in, like, I think there was honestly some drafts early on where he was beyond the top 100. I got him a lot in the 80s and the 90s. I think a couple times I pushed him into the 70s, but he was a pretty cheap asset this season you didn't have to pay for because people were worried about him being quote-unquote injury-prone. I think it's a ridiculous argument. I don't think that O'Neill Cruz is injury prone. I think he had a fluky injury, and he is primed to give you 25 and 25 at least this season for a Pirates lineup that also is kind of improved and I think will do a lot better. So I love O'Neill Cruz. He was the one shortstop that I was really targeting in a lot of drafts, specifically early. Once he became a second rounder, third rounder, and you've already taken him in the sixth, seventh, and eighth, it becomes kind of tricky to pay up for that, especially, you know, when you have the cheaper shares. But I think that he is going to really smash this year. Nolan Arenado is my preferred third baseman. Similar argument to Wilson Contreras. Just, I think people kind of devalued what he did because the team as a whole wasn't that great. But Nolan Arenado was still generally Nolan Arenado. There are some small signs that maybe he was declining. And I went into the offseason thinking I was going to be a fade on Arenado. But you're getting him past pick 100 in a lot of drafts. Nolan Arenado, who we're just talking a couple years removed. Again, Coors, blah, blah, blah. But he was a consistent 30 home run, 100 run, 100 RBI guy, hitting close to 300 every year. He has a down year, and now he's outside of the top 100. That is a buying opportunity. He's a boring player. He's not one of those guys like a Royce Lewis this year, or even the Chisholms and the O'Neill Cruises and Ellie De La Cruz and all these guys that were getting a lot of excitement. There was no excitement about Nolan Arenado. He was just a boring guy that people were, I don't even know if they were generally fading, but I think undervaluing. He should not be going outside of the top 100 for a guy that's likely to give you 25 to 30 homers, probably 100 ribbies. The batting average in its worst year was .266. So I think we're probably still looking at about a 270, 280 type of hitter. Like his first year in St. Louis was the 255 and then 293 and 266. So he doesn't have the Coors advantage anymore, but he should still be about a 270 hitter with 30 and 100. Going past pick 100, and not to mention he's probably going to chip in a few steals for you as well, where at third base, a lot of guys are giving you zero. So there's just a lot of reasons all around why I liked Olin Arenado. Mostly was it was the price. Like he was just going way too late in drafts, and I have quite a bit of him on my teams for this season because of it.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now, heading into the outfield, my first pick, and I picked three outfielders here. The first one was Jazz Chisholm. Jazz Chisholm is another guy we talked about yesterday. I think he has a very good chance of returning first-round value. It's about him being healthy. And we went through this a lot yesterday, but he has changed his diet. He's changed his routine. He is very committed to staying on the field. And if you look at what he's done just over the past 160 games, it's well over a 30-30 clip. You're looking at close to 100 runs, close to 100 ribbies. The talent is off the charts with Jazz Chisholm. It's just a matter of staying healthy. And if he does stay healthy, he is going to smash. And I think that the price there this draft season was very reasonable. 60s, 70s, 80s, generally like 60s and 70s. Maybe he was pushing to the 50s in some rooms. But a very reasonably priced player considering the upside. There's a chance that it doesn't work out, that there's a chance that he gets hurt again. Like last year, a lot of the injury-prone players, Jazz included, and Eloy and Buxton and all those injury-prone guys did get hurt. I'm just kind of banking on a young guy who's made some changes that seem to be tangible, hopefully able to stay on the field for the entire year. I don't know that it's going to happen for sure, but I am banking on it. I drafted a lot of Jazz Chisholm in the hope that this is the year for him. My second outfielder, somebody that I have a lot of shares of, Seiya Suzuki. I mean, a full season of Seiya Suzuki should be like 20-plus homers, probably not 20 steals, but like 15 steals or so. He's demonstrated he can hit for a high batting average. That lineup is very solid around him. I don't understand why he was going as late as he was either. Now, he started to push up at the end of draft season. Seiya Suzuki went from somebody that you could get in the 130s and 140s to somebody that was, you know, not usually top 100, but like around the 110, 120 type of pick range. And it was fine still, because I think that that's where he generally should have been going. But I did bank a lot of shares in the 130, 140 range. And I think that Seiya Suzuki, again, it's kind of a health thing. If he's not healthy, then that goes for everybody. But if Seiya Suzuki can play 130 games, then I think he is one of the best outfield draft picks of the season. And I've been taking a lot of Seiya. I've taken a lot of him in the hope that this is a year where he's able to play 130, 140. He's not too far off from it the last couple of seasons, really. Last year, Seiya Suzuki, forget the exact number. Let me pull it up. But it wasn't like he missed a ton of time, so it's not like we even need like a drastic change here, a drastic improvement. Like he played, what was it last year? 138 games. I honestly in my head thought that it was even less than that, but we're already coming from a place of a pretty solid number. He went for 20 homers and 6 steals in that time, batting 285. If he's able to even just do that again, I think he returns value. But I think that there's a little more speed in there potentially. The Bat X is projecting 12 stolen bases, 21 homers, 270 batting average. I mean, there's a lot to really like with Seiya, especially at the price we were paying. The third outfielder in this group for me was Chaz McCormick. Chaz McCormick is another guy, especially now that we don't have to deal with Dusty Baker and his nonsense of putting guys all over weird places in the lineup. Chaz should be a middle-of-the-order guy for one of the best lineups in baseball, certainly the best in the American League, in my opinion, that already demonstrated 2020 capabilities over just 115 games. He was 22-19 while batting .273. You know, the strikeout rate wasn't too high at 25.6. He was walking almost 9% of the time. He's had a very good spring training as well. I think that Chaz McCormick is somebody that was very undervalued, and I don't really understand it after what he did last year. 160, 170 a lot of the time is where you were drafting him. At that point, as like your third outfielder, sometimes even your fourth outfielder, depending on how heavy you went, I don't think you can really go too wrong there considering what he is capable of in that lineup. He could go for a 25-25. And I don't think people would be that surprised. He's very, very talented, and I think that team context is a huge piece of the puzzle. If Chaz McCormick was playing in Oakland, I wouldn't really care. But the fact that you're going to be, you know, really, really having great guys ahead of you, especially in that lineup, like Chaz McCormick might be somebody that can, I don't expect it, but 100 ribbies is something, depending on where he actually settles in, is something that's possible. Like, if he's batting fifth in the order, let me see where he is projected right now. He's projected 7, but I don't know that that's necessarily going to stick. Like, he should probably be batting ahead of Jose Abreu at this point. Yainer Diaz is kind of a coin flip, but either way, it's a very, very solid group ahead of him in that lineup. And if he's close to 100 ribbies, I wouldn't be surprised to go along with a potential 25-25 season out of him. Lot to really like with Chaz McCormick. He's one of my favorite players this season. I thought that he would be more expensive throughout draft season. I thought especially new manager in Houston, I thought that we would see maybe not a top 100 price tag on him, but I thought it would be fairly close anyway. I didn't think that it would be, I didn't think we'd be getting him where we were getting him for the majority of draft season. I think it was just a kind of a ridiculous discount on Chaz McCormick. Let's move over now to the pitchers. And the first guy that I was making sure I had a lot of shares of was Zach Eflin. Again, another guy that I talked about yesterday in the bold predictions, somebody that I think could be a top 10 starting pitcher. Last year, he was a top 5 fantasy starter, and people were drafting him as like the 20th, 25th starting pitcher off the board because of what? They expect he's going to get hurt again. You know, the point I made yesterday and the point you can make about a lot of players, honestly, is why are you taking him behind Glasnow? Like, what's the difference? Well, Glasnow is going to have more strikeouts, maybe has a higher ceiling, but like Eflin's ceiling, he just showed us as a top 5 starting pitcher potentially. He just did it last year. Glasnow has never done it. Glasnow has never got over 120 innings, and yet Glasnow is being picked like 40, 50 picks ahead of him. I just don't understand it. People were just kind of biased towards Eflin because he doesn't have a long, long track record of success. He's not a flashy strikeouts. He plays for Tampa. I don't know exactly why. Probably a combination of those three things, but he was somebody that was going very early on, sometimes outside of the top 100, or like in the 90s. And then now, of course, he went into the 60s and 70s by the time draft season ended. It's still technically going on, but by the time drafts really ended, I mean, he wasn't even that expensive still. He was going in the 60s and 70s, which is probably correct, but he's somebody that could very easily give you a top 50 starting pitcher season. A lot of these drafts, I was taking him as my second or third starting pitcher, and I think that there's a good chance we're going to see like an SP1 season from him again. So I took a lot of Zach Eflin. Hunter Brown was the second one. He's somebody I've talked about going back to last year. The surface results were terrible in Houston last season for him, but if you look below the surface, you got that great strikeout rate. The supporting metrics were really good. Obviously, the team context is excellent, so you're probably going to see more wins there than the average team or the average player with this skill set on any other given team. You can probably jack up Brown's win total by one or two compared to the average. There's a lot to like, especially the price. Now, again, with a lot of pitchers this time of year, he did get more expensive, especially with high-stakes leagues and pitchers going down left and right. Hunter Brown became somebody that was going in the 120s and 130s as opposed to 170, but I think that's still probably correct. 170 was just gravy. It was sweetness. I don't know why he was going so late. I think it was the surface stats from last year kind of scared some people off. But the talent is just immense in such a great organization. For me, it was a no-brainer to tap him pretty much every time he came around. And unless some people jumped him, because there were some rooms I was in where Hunter Brown got jumped 2-3 rounds, I wasn't the only one interested. So that was something that you had to kind of deal with, but I took him as much as I could. I really think Hunter Brown is going to have a great season. Nick Pivetta was the third starting pitcher I listed out here. He is my most drafted starting pitcher this season. Again, it was the price. The price of Nick Pivetta was generally like 170s, 160s. Now I think he's about 130s, 140s. But we're talking about somebody who was one of the best pitchers in the second half last season. 30% strikeout minus walk rate, like just ridiculous numbers. And I've made this joke a couple times now. It's kind of stale at this point. But if his name was anything other than Nick Pivetta, if his name was John Smith and he did what he did in the second half, he'd be a top 100 pick. Because of the fact that he has hurt us repeatedly in the past, we're not interested anymore, collectively speaking, because some people are still interested like myself, but I think a lot of people are kind of like, all right, how many times am I going to let Nick Pivetta hurt me, ruin my season, et cetera, et cetera? And they're generally kind of done. I understand, but I think the price was cheap enough this year, especially combined with some tangible changes down the stretch to really invest in him as like your fifth or sixth starting pitcher, fourth, fifth, maybe fifth, sixth. It was not something that was going to be hurting you. Even if he doesn't pan out, if Nick Pivetta ends up having a terrible season, then he's in the range where, okay, like there's like a 25% chance you're going to cut somebody drafted in that range. Anyway, there's also a chance that Pivetta can carry over what he did last year. Even if it's 80, 90% of it, that could be a serious value. So I have a lot of Nick Pivetta, a lot of all three of these guys in the rotation that I've mentioned. The relief pitcher that I targeted a lot was Pete Fairbanks. The talent is just so high. Pete Fairbanks is so, so good. He's dealt with some injuries, and there's also the Tampa factor of, are they ever going to just let guys play? Is there ever not going to be weirdness going on in Tampa with platoons or closer seniority, whatever? I'm taking a chance that Pete Fairbanks this year is going to be healthy, and he's going to be having that role fully. Tampa will play around with matchups, and there'll be weird openers and stuff sometimes that'll mess around with the pen. But I think Pete Fairbanks is a pretty safe bet for close to 100 strikeouts, maybe 90-ish with 30 saves. And the price he was going was well beyond a lot of those other top-tier closers. He was going in the 90s and honestly well past pick 100 in a lot of cases as well, whereas you're seeing a lot of closers with similar talent level and similar situations going, you know, 50, 40, 30 picks ahead of him. So Fairbanks was a guy where there was a couple leagues where I reached up on closers, you know, Devin Williams and Juan Duran mostly, just to let you know how I'm doing. But I think in a lot of those leagues where you are kind of punting, not going for a high-end Diaz, Hader, Class A Williams type, then Pete Fairbanks really, really made a lot of sense. Evan Phillips as well, those guys were both pretty undervalued, but I decided to go with Pete Fairbanks here for the My Team guys. He was somebody that I was really, really interested in. So let me recap that. Wilson Contreras as the catcher. First base was Josh Naylor. Tyro Estrada at second. O'Neill Cruz at short. And Nolan Arenado at third. The outfield was Seiya Suzuki, Chaz McCormick, and Zach Eflin. Starting pitchers, I mentioned Eflin in the outfield. Eflin's obviously a starting pitcher, not an outfielder. Eflin, Hunter Brown, and Nick Pivetta as the starting pitchers. And then Pete Fairbanks as my reliever. That is the team of guys that I was more interested in pretty much than anybody else this year. Now let's talk about the guys that I actually ended up drafting, because there's a lot of these guys that I was very interested in that I just couldn't get shares of, or not enough shares, or I got interested too late. Because sometimes you see something in March and it's like, oh man, like I wish I knew that in December. And you might have missed out on a couple players because of that. I know I did, but these are the guys that I drafted at least 40% of the time this season. There are five of them. Wilson Contreras, who we already mentioned. Brett Beatty for the New York Mets. So Brett Beatty is somebody where I heard, I think it was an article at the end of last year, I think it was Scott White who wrote something about him breaking out, and I wasn't really fully bought in. I was a little bit bought in to the point where I drafted him a couple times in draft champions leagues, draft and holds. But over the course of the winter, you start to look around what's going on in New York, and you think, why wouldn't they just give Brett Beatty the chance here? He's like a classic post-type sleeper, where nobody's really interested anymore. Well past pick 300 is his ADP, but he's in a lineup that's actually quietly really good, especially with JD Martinez going to be arriving. I don't know when he'll be in the lineup, but within a week or so, you'd imagine he'd be there. It's a pretty robust lineup now that Beatty is a member of, right in the middle of it, actually. I just bought into the post hype. I think that, you know, we were paying close to, not a top 100 pick. He was like 150, I think, in a lot of cases last year. People were hoping that last year was the breakout, and now they're kind of just not interested anymore. This is like the Josh Lowe situation for me for this year, where I really think that, people are very, very inclined to give the guy a chance in year one. And if the guy doesn't actually come to fruition in year one, we kind of just forget about them. And Brett Beatty, perfect example of that from this year. It was bad last year. He was not good. But now people have kind of fully given up, and that's where I bought in, especially seeing what he was doing in spring. He was taking the cover off the ball. So I have him on six teams, technically five NFBC teams, but I also took Brett Beatty on my Tout Wars team. I really like him. I think that there's a very, very good chance that Brett Beatty is able to return. I mean, he doesn't need to do pretty much anything to return positive value on the ADP, but I think he'll be a mainstay on a lot of fantasy rosters as a starting third baseman, never mind like a corner or utility. I think that Brett Beatty is somebody that is very, very undervalued this year.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Another guy that I took on more than 40% of my teams was Tim Anderson. Tim Anderson was unsigned for a lot of the offseason. That kept his price down to the point of where it was like nothing. He was going like well past pick 300. Awful year last year combined with a, you know, no team for the first several months of the offseason will keep your price down. But Tim Anderson is only a couple years removed from being one of the best fantasy shortstops. A top 50 pick, a guy who's going to hit well over 300, steal you a good number of bases, decent pop, going to score a lot of runs, like just a top five shortstop for a long time. A bad year, you know, personal stuff gets in the way and you're not with your team anymore. And everybody just forgets about you. But now he's in a pretty good situation in Miami where he's going to play. And I think there's a good chance he's top of the order a lot of the time. It might not be every single day. It might not be right from the get-go. But Tim Anderson makes sense as a top of the order bat. And he's, for almost all of these leagues, I think actually every single one, he was a bench slash reserve round player. So I don't have a lot invested in him in terms of like, he needs to smash, he needs to be a starter, and he needs to, you know, hit 300 with 30 steals. Like, I don't need that from Tim Anderson. I just need him to be kind of a viable player for fantasy. Like, he doesn't need to smash just because of the price. But because of the price, I was able to get a very solid backup shortstop where a lot of people are, you know, you're going for okay options. Maybe it's a Renjifo or it's a Neto or it's whoever. But Tim Anderson has such a high ceiling where with a lot of these guys that were going in this range, it's like, well, maybe they luck into this, maybe they luck into that. For Tim Anderson, it's, well, maybe he just throws last year out and we're able to see him get back on track. Good, solid track record of success, albeit with some injuries mixed in. But considering the price that I was paying for Tim Anderson, I don't have a problem here whatsoever. Another guy over 40% rostered for me is Bryson Stott. If you guys watched me do mock drafts this year, if you watch my previews, reviews, if you listen to or absorb any of my content, you've likely heard me talk about how much I like Bryson Stott. Super undervalued player, especially if you get into that 80, 90, 100 range needing speed. Bryson Stott just took 30 bags last year. He's in a great lineup. That Phillies lineup, I think that it's not even talked about enough how great that lineup is because they're kind of overshadowed in that division by the Braves. But Bryson Stott is, you know, a guy who hit 280 last year, 30 stolen bases, good numbers across the board, and he's going to be closer to the bottom of that order. Now, that didn't stop him last year. I don't think it'll stop him this year. You're looking at a guy who played 151 games, 31 steals, 15 homers, batted 280. The projections all have him, you know, high 60s generally for batting average, double-digit homers, 20-plus steals. I just think he's super undervalued. Like, of all the players, like, I thought Bryson Stott would be a top 60 or 70 pick. I really did. I thought he'd be going in the Ha-Seon Kim, Nico Horner type of range. And maybe what holds him back there is the multi-position, because those guys have a couple of positions, second short, and third, where Stott is just a second baseman. So maybe some people will take that away from him. That's why he was going past pick 100. I just couldn't wrap my head around it. In pretty much every league where I needed a little boost of speed, which was a lot of them, just based on the way that my drafts went, Bryson Stott was a huge, huge target. Even if it's not 30 again, even if it's 25, you're looking at great team context. So runs and RBIs are probably pretty secure, especially from a second baseman. Double-digit homers and, you know, potential for 20-plus steals and a 270 batting average. I have no idea why we let him fall past pick 100 all draft season, but here we are. Bryson Stott, one of my most rostered players. I really, really love him. Now, the other guy that I have on 40-plus percent of my teams was Brian Abreu. The reason for Brian Abreu, a lot of them are draft and hold leagues. Let me just double check here and see where I've got him. So one, two, three draft and holds. One of them is a best ball, and one of them is TGFBI. So the reason I have a lot of Brian Abreu, well, there's a couple of reasons. I trust Josh Hader, but I don't fully have 100% faith in him. There's been some stuff like, there's a few things. His personal life, there's been some stuff, not really last year, but the year before, that caused him to miss some time and kind of acted as a distraction. So I don't think that those problems are still there, but it's something to keep in the back of your head that maybe something could pop up. Again, that's not a major factor here. But Josh Hader's gotten older. I think his personality is a little bit rough for locker room sometimes. I mean, you see what he did last year in San Diego, where he didn't want to pitch more than an inning. And I think people were kind of upset with him. And I just feel like there's a lot of ifs with Josh Hader. Big contract, new team, you know, personal stuff, personality stuff as well, I think, to some extent. That's a little bit of conjecture, so don't read too much into that. But I just don't know for sure that at this stage of his career, Josh Hader is fully guaranteed to hold that spot the whole year just because of the talent that is around him. Don't get me wrong. I'd be pretty surprised if Josh Hader like completely crumbles and loses this job, but he's going to be 30 this year. He's getting older. He's got a lot of miles on him for the average closer. He has been doing this since 2017. I know closers don't have as much mileage on them, but they throw a lot harder, so it's a little bit different. Josh Hader, I like him fine. I like him fine, but I also don't have super, super confidence in him. Like last year, 128 ERA, fantastic. His xFIP was 352. Sierra was 315. They're still fine, but they're career worst type of numbers. So the walks also kind of went up. The strikeouts are not quite what they used to be. There are some worries I have with Josh Hader. Brian Abreu is, him and Ryan Pressly are both kind of the eighth, seventh inning, depending on the situation type of guys. Ryan Pressly is fairly old. They've shown that they're not fully confident in Pressly by the fact that they went out and got Hader. So a lot of this with Abreu is save contingencies. If there is an injury, if there is some problem with with performance or whatever, I think there's a good chance he ends up with some saves. But aside from that, he's a very, very high strikeout reliever that was essentially free in most of these leagues. Last couple of rounds, you were taking Brian Abreu, and he could be a sub-2 ERA guy who strikes out 100 for me. And there's a lot of weeks where I'm probably not going to want to stream. And a lot of these, like I said, are draft and holds anyway. There are going to be points where I have like 4 pitcher injuries, 5 pitcher injuries. And it's like, well, do I want to stick in this guy in an iffy start? Or I can put Brian Abreu in for likely 3 innings, 6 strikeouts, likely not going to allow any runs. Like, there are weeks where that just makes a lot more sense for your team. Daily changes, weekly changes, there are times when it makes a lot more sense to slot in a Brian Abreu than it is to shoehorn in some random 2-start guy just because you want the volume. It rarely works out for you. I think it would be a long shot for Abreu to actually get the closer role, but there are concerns. There are concerns I have with Hader, and there are concerns that I have and the organization has with Pressly. If they had full confidence in Pressly, they wouldn't have got Hader and spent a ton of money on him. But I think at this stage, there are kind of concerns all around. So Abreu is just a little bit of an insurance policy there for me. In terms of the guys that I've drafted, on about a third of my teams or more, there's a lot of familiar faces. Alejandro Kirk, I've talked about a lot. Really, really cheap as a second catcher this year. Not somebody that you had to pay up for. Only a year removed from having some incredibly lofty projections. I heavily invested in Kirk. A third of my teams, he is one of my catchers. Jorge Polanco, I was investing in a lot before the trade to Seattle. Don't love the ballpark that he's been sent to, but I think it's a better situation in terms of the team context and in terms of the role. He'll be a regular in that lineup behind Julio, where in Minnesota, he may have had to do some platooning. So I have a lot of Jorge Polanco, only a couple of years removed from him, from, 35 and 100? Like, really good stuff. We're not too far away from that still. If he's healthy, I think he's a huge bargain. Nick Pivetta, we've already talked about him, and Tyro Estrada, Zach Eflin as well. These are all guys I have on a third of my teams. Adam Duvall is somebody that I came around to later on in draft season. Took him in Tout Wars as well, so I have 5 shares of Adam Duvall. He's somebody with massive, massive power that went back to a place where he's had success, and his main competition right now for job is Jared Kelenic. They're gonna be platooning, but Jared Kelenic, like, this is kind of my... I have a couple of Kelenic shares, but this is kind of my investment in the backup because I don't have a full confidence in Jared Kelenic. I think he'll be good in Atlanta, but if things don't work out and we get Adam Duvall, who has proven that he can be led the league in RBI in Atlanta just 2 years ago or 3 years ago, close to a 40 home run season. So this was one where it's like round 47, round 48, round 49, he's undrafted. Why not? Why not take a chance on him? And that investment early on looks like it's a pretty good one at this point. Who else do we have here on a third of our rosters? Garrett Crochet, who's been given the ball on opening day from the White Sox. This one is a hat tip to Vlad Sedler. He pointed him out to me earlier on in the offseason. Not to me specifically, but Vlad talked about him. I forget if he just had him aggressively ranked or if it was an article or something, but it was definitely Vlad and the good people over at FTN Fantasy who turned my interest to Garrett Crochet. And lo and behold, he's starting opening day for the White Sox. I don't know if Vlad or anybody would have predicted that. But he is going to have a solid role. Those converted relievers are kind of interesting, but high pedigree prospect. I don't expect things to work out necessarily in this kind of situation, but again, it's the price. The price was just so cheap. I have no reason to avoid him, especially when I got somebody smart like Vlad saying that he is somebody that you should be investing in. I was paying dirt cheap prices for most of draft season on Garrett Crochet. So that one is one that I'm very, very happy in. Only a couple more players that are on a third of rosters. Rowdy Tellez, really terrible stuff from him last year. New situation. Again, very, very cheap guy that I have on a lot of draft and holds. Actually, all four of my shares of Rowdy Tellez are just in draft and holds as like my third or fourth first baseman. Potentially could give you 30 home runs. It wouldn't shock me, wouldn't shock you probably if Rowdy Tellez gets back on track this year. And that's why I've invested. It's a late pick as a reserve round with upside. And that's what a lot of these late round picks are. Now, this one is kind of shitty. This was early shares. I haven't drafted him in a couple of months, but Oscar Colas. I drafted Oscar Colas four times, the outfielder for the White Sox. I know he did not make the opening day team. This one is not one that I would probably do again, but again, kind of falling into the post-hype category of somebody that a lot of smart people were interested in last year. He did not have a good season. I was thinking, well, maybe, you know, the White Sox are not exactly flush with talent. They'll probably just give Colas a chance this year. And I still think they will, but it might take a little bit longer than I had hoped for. Again, now these are shares and draft and holds. I don't need them to pay off in week one, but it definitely sucks seeing Colas not make that team. So that is one where I'm not so happy about. The last player that I have here on at least a third of my rosters is Christopher Sanchez. I think that the command is just so good. Is he going to be a sub 5% walk rate again? Probably not, but he's got great team context, a solid role in that rotation, and another player that has, you know, been hyped up by a lot of smart people in the industry, and the price was not expensive, $230 to $250, even later in a lot of cases. I know he became kind of an industry darling near the end, but Christopher Sanchez was a very, very cheap player this year, well past pick 200 in most cases. You might even see him on some of your waiver wires if you're playing in a 10 or a 12-team league. Go and pick him up if he is, because I think Christopher Sanchez is going to smash this year as the number four starter likely in Philadelphia. Not sure how the seniority will break out, but I think that he's in for some really good stuff this year. But that will do it for the preseason shows. We are finally done. The next time you guys hear me behind the mic, we will have real Major League Baseball going on. I know we had a couple of games last week, but that was honestly just a cruel exercise in teasing us and then going a week without real games again. Tomorrow, we have real games. Now, there's already been a couple of games rained out because we can just never have any fun. But there will still be games going on. We'll be talking about some of the early results tomorrow. Probably going to wait as late as I can in the day to record just to see what we got going on in terms of news and analysis. But we'll be talking opening day tomorrow. I hope you guys will join us for the ride. If you like what you hear, consider rating and reviewing the show. That really does help. If you guys want to leave the 5-star rating, that would obviously be fantastic. Leave a couple of kind words in the comments section as well, or the review section, whatever it is. It all helps the algorithm, and that is obviously the goal here, to get the show seen by more people. So you guys can help out there, and we can maybe help you out if you haven't done your draft yet. Go check out our draft guide. Link is in the description of the episode. Even if you have done your draft, we are going to be switching over to in-season content, going to be giving you some daily pickups. We're going to be looking at FAB on the weekends, analyzing baseball, fantasy baseball from every angle imaginable. So check out the link, get yourself a fantasy pass, and see all the great work from our contributors. But that will do it. We will talk to you again tomorrow, but until then, everybody, take care and have a great night.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.